Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the Intelligent Design the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture here in Seattle, Washington. We have a very special guest with us today, Dr. David Berlinski, here all the way from Paris, who is doing a book tour in the U.S. about his new book, The Devil's Delusion. Dr. Berlinski, it's wonderful to have you on the show with us today here in our studio.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
Well, we're all very excited about your new book, The Devil's Delusion.
I think not as excited as I am, let me tell you.
Well, I'm sure it's been a long time in coming, and I'm sure that Richard Dawkins is very excited about your book as well. So briefly, what is your new book about?
Well, it's called The Devil's Delusion, and the subtitle is Atheism and Its Scientific Pretensions. And I really think the stress should be on scientific pretensions, because that's really what my book is about. Mm. The extraordinary idea that in 2008 the scientific community has more or less established that atheism is a rational, elegant, satisfying, conclusive position that all rational, satisfied, elegant men and women should adopt. I find that an extraordinary kind of claim. Mm.
Is the new atheism scientific?
Barely. I mean, you might as well ask whether it's literate. It's neither. Because the people who are advocating atheism, Richard Dawkins, Steven Weinberg, great physicist,
sure.
Sam Harris, they're profoundly illiterate with respect to the tradition that they're attacking, namely the theological tradition of the West that has been continuous for more than 5,000 years.
Mm.
They don't know a thing about it, which is astonishing when you think that people are making claims attacking a certain tradition and reveling in the radiance of their ignorance.
Many people have compared the new atheists to really repeating many of the old village atheist arguments from the 19th century. Are the new atheists really new?
It's hard to say. I mean, if you have someone like Steven Weinberg, who is advocating atheism very strenuously and has all the resources of his great insights into particle physics to back him up, but never draws a connection between his professional and his atheistic concerns, one has to suspend judgment, because it would be very interesting to hear in detail and with some precision and some respect for logic and philosophy just what he has in mind.
Mm.
Richard Dawkins does have a new argument. He has what he calls an argument that comes close to proving that God does not exist.
Okay.
But again, in terms of newness, if you look at the argument with only a rudimentary respect for the tradition, it's precisely the argument that Aquinas examined and rejected in the 13th century.
Wow. So has anyone provided scientific proof of God's non-existence, or has Dawkins provided
You've
that?
You've got to be kidding, right? I mean, not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close to being close, which is an infinite distance away from the target.
Mm. How about God's existence? Has anyone provided scientific proof of that?
Not even close. Not even close to being close. But would we appreciate a mathematical argument for the existence of God that persuaded everyone? Would that be an object worthy of veneration, respect, and awe, and gratitude? I somehow suspect that God, if he exists, has arranged the circumstances so as to shroud his identity with enormous success.
Hmm. Now, turning back to Richard Dawkins, he has been fond of comparing instructing children in religious belief to child abuse. Do you agree?
Well, that's kind of a Richard Dawkins amiable form of lunacy. I see no connection whatsoever. And not only do I fail to see a connection, but I think religious believers throughout the ages would scratch their heads in astonishment.
Mm.
After all, we do raise children. I mean, it's a process that only human beings undertake.
Mm.
It's a long period of childhood, and you can't leave children in a complete vacuum, and the idea that you should let children decide for themselves on every issue of importance is, of course, incoherent. How can they?
Hmm. Well, how about these ideas? Are they gaining traction in the scientific community?
I think that's the wrong question. They've already gained traction in the scientific community, and with its well-noted ability to speak with a single voice on matters of doctrine and faith, the scientific community has closed ranks.
Well, obviously, people like to critique and attack religion. How about secularism? Has it been a force for good, say, in the past 100 years?
Well, that's a historical question. Let's look at the record. Has the 20th century ranked among the most considerable centuries in human history in terms of its kindness, its goodness, its achievements, its spirit of generosity, its absence from the most abominable crimes? think the answer is obvious. The 20th century was the most lamentable century in all of human history. Mm. It was also the first century in human history that was completely secular, that really was a secular century. Maybe there's a connection. You know, it's a difficult historical question to ask, but maybe there is a connection. Why should we ignore that possibility?
Mm. You are obviously very interested in the fine-tuning arguments, fine-tuning of the natural cosmic laws to allow for the existence of advanced forms of life. How has atheism responded to these kinds of fine-tuning arguments?
Well, I don't know that atheism is obligated to respond directly. I mean, it may, in fact, be the case that God does not exist and that we face very considerable problems in the interpretation of physics or in the interpretation of the data from molecular biology, and we just have to live with that. Nobody is promising us that if we adopt one position, all questions will be resolved.
Sure.
But one thing I think we can say, if we look at physics, for example, the last 10, 15 years with the advent of string theory, and the decision to explain the curious properties of string theory in terms of the multiverse hypothesis, the notion that there's a landscape of possible universes out there, and that since everything that's possible is bound to occur somewhere or at some time, there's no such thing as a fine-tuning problem to investigate. I think if we look at that, you have all the signs of a certain kind of psychopathology, a flight from one obvious idea, a single universe, a single creator, and the voluptuous embrace of an idea that does not really commend itself as particularly sensible. I mean, you'd think that one universe is about enough for the physicist to handle. No reason to go to 10 to the 500th number of universes.
Now, what about the new trend to try to use science to explain religious belief? How do you feel that the new atheists are latching on to this attempt to explain religious
that's
belief?
That's so extraordinarily rich and preposterous that only a man born with a petrified diaphragm could fail to laugh himself to sleep every night. You get a molecular geneticist arguing that religious belief represents a bizarre gene. The one thing he's never going to ask himself is whether perhaps molecular genetics involves a bizarre gene. I mean, it's a complete absence of an ability to look in the mirror. If religious belief is tied to evolutionary circumstances, why not say belief in Darwin's theory is tied to evolutionary circumstances, but no one will ever say that for obvious reasons. Once that door is open, who knows how anyone's going to slam it shut again.
Is this just a road to postmodernism and completely avoiding any objective discussion of why we believe what we believe?
I don't know. You know, postmodernism is not a term that's ever made the slightest bit of sense to me. I read these guys and I'll tell you the truth, I don't really know what they're talking about, which is one of their charms. I acknowledge that. But no, I think it's just a question of what psychologists call aspect blindness. These guys are saying, well, we can identify the sources of religious belief. God forbid we do the same thing for the sources of scientific belief.
Sure, sure.
Because if we say scientific belief is exempt, at that precise second, religious believers can say religious belief is exempt too.
I'd like to know more about what originally got you interested in this subject. You obviously are a mathematician and a philosopher who's written some wonderful work on those subjects. What made you decide to turn your time towards dealing with atheism and the debate over science and religion?
I think it was a combination of irritation and envy. Irritation because I really don't like what these guys, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, Daniel Dennett, Richard Dawkins, Vic Stenger, Steven Weinberg. I don't like what they're saying, thinking, arguing, and advocating in their books. That was the irritable part about it. And at the same time, I have to acknowledge that the enormous success they've scored certainly prompted a subterranean tinkle in my own thoughts, why not me? So the combination of irritation and envy prompted me to write the book.
Now, I can't help but observing that what makes you stand out of many of the people who have responded to the new atheists, obviously Alistair McGrath and others, they are all, you know, what you would call probably very devout Christians. And obviously you come from a different background. That's not your background. And so do you think that your background gives you a certain cachet in your ability to deal with this topic?
I don't know whether it gives me a certain cachet. I represent the great majority of people whose religious convictions can be summed up in a single line: have a good time all the time. And if we can find it in ourselves to object to the new atheism, my goodness, everyone can.
What's interesting is, you know, I've read Dawkins and Dennett and Hitchens and Harris and all these guys as well.
Not in one night, I hope.
Not in one night, but it didn't take that long, though. It was very surprisingly...
Yeah, Dawkins goes quick.
Dawkins went very quick, and it's a lot of stuff. You know where he's going, and you can guess where he's going before you even go there. I mean, what a lot of these guys have to say is, I think it's old material, and I find myself wondering, why are we still, I mean, why has this issue experienced a resurgence, given that there have been so many books written back and forth on this topic over the last, you know, 100 years, and I just don't see a lot of new arguments coming from them. I'd like to know your take on this, because I find myself perplexed. Why are we still, why is this issue experiencing such a resurgence right now?
Well, of course, I beg to differ, because I regard my book as having all the qualities of a virgin mountain spring.
Excepting your book, of course.
Yes, with that exception, I agree with you that these discussions have been endless. But that doesn't mean that there's any reason for them to stop.
Sure.
They just keep going. What are the specific sources of what the Wall Street Journal call militant atheism? I think there are two. One is the fact that 9/11 scared the living daylights out of everyone. Hmm. Me too.
Sure.
I was in Washington, D.C. at the time. I saw the Pentagon smoke coming from the building. And it was genuinely frightening, not so much because of what 9/11 represented, but what might be in the future. Mm. I mean, the thought of religious fanatics getting their hands on a nuclear weapon, I mean, let's be honest, that really is frightening. So it became very easy to draw a certain faulty syllogism, or a certain faulty argument in any case. There are examples of religious fanaticism that are truly frightening. Therefore, all forms of religious belief are truly frightening.
Yes.
I think that's an obvious sort of argument. And the temptation to make that argument should have been resisted by sophisticated people. Mm. Because not only is the argument invalid and unsound, but it is one of those arguments that one makes only by blinding oneself to the fact that billions of people happen to disagree with its conclusions.
Yeah.
And that should be something significant to anyone who writes on these topics.
Sure.
The second is, I think there's a certain mood of exhaustion within the physical sciences. Things have not worked out as splendidly as everyone assumed, say, from the perspective of 1970, 1971. Many, many emerging doubts in all the scientific disciplines, not only molecular biology and Darwinian evolution, but in physics as well. Physics is a much more important case. And when people are pressed, when they believe they represent an institution that has certain internal difficulties, the natural reaction is to lash out at other people. It's my reaction, too. It's the first thing I do.
Sure. I appreciate your point about how it's so perplexing that because one particular radical sect of one religion has caused so much trouble in this world, that therefore there's an all-out attack upon religion. And if you don't mind, I had a personal connection to the 9/11 situation in that about 3 days before 9/11, I moved into an apartment complex in San Diego where it turns out that two of the Pentagon hijackers lived.
Yeah.
And there I was seeing the pool of our apartment complex on CNN. And obviously I had many Muslim friends when I went to college. I remain very close friends with some of them today. They're not violent people whatsoever, but it's because of this one particular sect of one religion, and therefore these people make this argument that all religions are evil, all religions are bad, and it just doesn't make any sense to me.
There's a simple term in logic to designate that. It's called a non sequitur.
Yes, that's very true. I think that's true. Well, where do you see this debate going in the next 5 to 10 years? Is it gonna go away and then come back? Are we gonna see?
It's tough to say. It's really like a yo-yo. It goes up and it comes down. I think the militant atheism has made its case. And there are two things to consider. One is the case that it has made, which is interesting, no question about it. And the other is the extent to which it represents the sentiments of the scientific
community. Sure,
sure. It's a separate question. My feeling is that it does represent the sentiments of the scientific community to a very considerable extent. There are obviously exceptions. The second point is that having been said, what is the reaction, the counter-reaction? There's force majeure, contre-force majeure. And that remains to be determined. It's not at all clear to me whether, for example, in the United States, the huge number of people who are sincerely attached to some form of religious belief are going to achieve a certain matter of indignation or whether they will accept the abuse without demur. I don't know. It remains to be seen.
Well, Dr. David Berlinski, I think that you've done a wonderful job with this new book, and I encourage our listeners to go check it out, The Devil's Delusion, Atheism and Its Scientific Pretensions. It's available, obviously, wherever you can buy books, Amazon.com. And Dr. David Berlinski is going to be speaking in a number of places around the United States over the month of April. So be sure to check out discovery.org, and we'll have lots of information on our events pages about where he's speaking and when. You can go hear him speak about this new book. Dr. Berlinski, thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure.
This is Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast signing off. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Finn. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com. Thank you.